Dr. Most, thanks for joining us again on WGN.
Sure, John. Good morning. How are you?
Good. I'll take just a few minutes of your time. I know you're busier than us. What are you hearing about these Walgreens 15-minute self-administered tests, and how optimistic are you about them?
John, I guess there's two things. One, I'm cautiously optimistic. It's the Abbott test that they're looking at using right now, which we are testing as well as other universities, and we're not getting quite the results we want from them. So a negative test there is a concern because it may be a false negative. So looking into that. And then also, what are you going to do with the information once you get it? You know, we have to remember that these tests are just a snapshot in time. You can go to Walgreens, get the test done and be negative, and then go to the grocery store or go get gas and then infect yourself and be positive. So we are really basing it a lot on symptoms and now telling everybody, make sure you wear your mask. You know, you're trying to protect yourself as if you were an asymptomatic carrier. So could be promising, but the jury's still out, I would say.
Are they rushing this to market quicker than would normal protocols would require?
Some people would agree with that, John, saying, you know, why the big rush to get this? You know, if we were going to be testing people that we need to know because we're trying to make a decision where we're going to place them in the hospital is one thing, versus if your neighbors get tested and you don't, how differently are you going to treat yourself? We don't want to get that false negative and then say, oh, I'm negative. I can social distance now. You've been tested negative. I've been tested negative. Everything's fine. When in fact, that may not be the case. So not letting our guard down based on a test result is probably one of the biggest concerns we have.
Do you know what the false positive numbers are? What is the incidence of that?
Yeah, it's not so much the false positive number, John. It's the false negative
number. Pardon me, that's
meaning,
what I meant, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to figure out exactly right now. And whether it's based on how well the specimen is collected or whether it's based on the test itself. So those are the tests that are being done. Rush University is doing it. We are doing it. Because we need to have the response there, because if we do get a negative on that test, will we then follow up with a more sensitive and specific test? We certainly are doing that on hospitalized patients, but we don't want to give the false sense of security in the public on a test that may not be ideal.
Are you able to put a number on that, though, doctor? Is it 1 in 100, 10 in 100? How often are these tests maybe giving bad information?
Yeah, not yet. That's exactly the testing that's being done on a very scientific level. So we don't want to throw out a number because we don't want to throw the wrong information out there. So it's being tested very, very tightly right now so that we do have a good, accurate number. This is the first time these tests have been done. So it's not like we have years and years history and we know the sensitivity and specificity and we can work around it. We're looking for a test that has highly specific as well as highly sensitive. And we're afraid that the Abbott test is not going to potentially deliver that. But the jury's still out. We're still working on it. And once we get those results, I'm sure you'll be hearing them.
I could keep that in mind, get the test, and if it came up positive, at least I would know that, though, right?
Absolutely, 100%. The test that's positive, that's great. We know that, and if you were to have that and tested positive, we want you to isolate your, in your family and socially isolate from everybody. Very similar to what we're asking everybody to do right now for these next, you know, three weeks. So, you know, kind of difficult to say how worthwhile the test will be. And we don't want to, like I said, don't want people to feel comfortable saying, oh, I'm negative. I can now go and do something I wouldn't have done 2 days ago.
The president said, what have you got to lose if you take that chloroquine cocktail? And I understand that. I'm going to ask you about this every day, doctor. But, I mean, what is the answer to that? What have you got to lose? If I had access to that and I felt the symptoms coming on and I took it, what have I got to lose?
John, I heard the best answer from one of our cardiologists when that question came up. And you know what his response was? Your pulse. So we have to realize that these drugs are not without side effects and not without concerns. One of the side effects or concerns with this drug is something called cardiomyopathy, where you can have sudden death from this medication. So there's a couple things. One, if you look at what the side effects are, there are quite a few of them. You know, drowsiness, dry mouth,
blindness.
Loss of there's a lot of them. So testing and treating somebody who we know is positive, knowing the risks and benefits of a drug is one thing. To blindly take it saying, what could I lose? You know, we got to be really careful. Headaches, dizziness, nausea, vomiting, loss of appetite. I mean, the list goes on. And John, probably the other big thing is We have a lot of patients with lupus or rheumatoid arthritis that actually need this medication that are finding it very difficult to find now to treat their conditions versus us taking it because we want to be protective or safe. So I'm not a big fan of the president just saying, just go ahead and take it. What could we have to lose? And like I said, the cardiologist who made it very clear, your pulse is one thing that we should consider. So not that that happens often, but let's make sure we're treating the patients that we know need the medication. And let's make sure everybody goes into it knowing what the side effects are for the medication versus what the benefit they may get from this. Because again, it's still all anecdotal. We don't have a lot of studies showing us how well chloroquine works.
John, if you have Dr. Most on, could you ask him to comment on UVC lamps to disinfect objects? You've answered that before. My recollection is you don't think that's effective.
Yeah, you know, you have to remember that most tanning beds, most UV lights that people have are, you know, tanning beds and others, and those are UVA and UVB. The ones we use in the medical profession to clean rooms and to clean equipment and that is UVC. The bad thing is that we haven't done the test to say how long before I put my groceries in front of this under this light, how long would it work? So I'm not a big fan of it just because it hasn't been proven, and it could potentially just a bunch of overkill, to be honest with you, unless, you know, you could be safe and take care of the things properly and you wouldn't have to be concerned.
So, Doctor, when was the first case in the States? And I ask because my mom had all of these symptoms in early January. I mean, the cough, the achy, the dry cough, couldn't breathe. I've been emailing with another woman who said she went through the same thing about the same time. They've had a doctor tell them that they think they probably or may well have had it.
Absolutely. Steve, when we're looking back now, we're going to look at a lot of these cases in January where we went and did the test. We tested for strep and we tested flu influenza A and B, and they all came back negative. Those individuals most likely had this. And now what we'll find is when we go and do a blood test on them later this summer, that they have antibodies, so that they actually did have the illness, that they fought it off. They were part of that group that could fight through it, and they've actually had it. I think you'll start to see, as we start to do more and more blood tests, that the number of people who actually had this illness is far greater mm-hmm. than we thought, mm-hmm. and a lot of them would have been in early January.
So why did it take off now then and not then?
It's all a matter of dispersion. So, you know, a few people touch a few people, but after that, and it grows, and we didn't social distance at the right amount of time at the right times. Think about St. Patrick's Days at the bars in Chicago. Think about spring breaks. So, you know, you started to with a small number, and now you've just continued to increase the exposures and increase those numbers. So that's why the shelter at home might help.
So it was spreading, but it just hadn't reached the mass that it has now, which is what I told Steve Bertrand earlier today, doctor, and I reminded him that I got a B from Eileen Grosso's biology class in high school, but I'm no expert. My last question for you.
John, what did you get in statistics, which is more important than the...
What an interesting point, sir. I hear you on that. If I have the virus on my finger and I touch my face, say my cheek, it's not going to crawl into one of my mucous membranes, one of my orifices, right? So it might be living there. Maybe I should take attention to wash my face when I wash my hands, doctor.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a great idea. We touch our face so often that washing your face is just as important as washing your hands, to be honest with you. But we obviously will do our hands easier and more often. But you're absolutely right. You know, when we say we touch our face, we rub the bottom of our nose, we touch our mouth, we'll touch our lips. Those are the ones that it's going to get infected, not if you scratch your forehead. If you rub your eyes, however, there's a chance as well, because it can be transmitted into the eye as well.
I hear your phone and computer pinging in the background, doctor. Do what you do, and thank you for giving us your time today.